check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome into the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prehm. Eric Scopel is with me as always on this podcast. We're going to welcome in Angie Machado of BeaverBlitz.com. Angie, she's on the show to preview this game. We were discussing it earlier. What do we call this game? Like, it used to be called the Civil War. We're no longer instructed to do that. Does it need a name?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. So I have caught myself saying Civil War more times than not this week. So I'm trying. I'm just calling it, you know, the Oregon game, but I'm trying, but I might mess up. Cause like I said, I'm old, so it's hard.
The Beavers are 1-2 coming into this game. They've looked good though, I think in their three games that they've played this season. One guy that's in particular that's looked really good is Jamar Jefferson, stud of a running back. And I think any team, the goal when they play Oregon State is to stop him. And so my question is to get this off with, is Tristan Jibby a guy that he can beat one of the better teams in the conference with his arm? Is this offense built to win games when Tristan Jibby has to throw the football 30 or more times in a football game? Or is Oregon State knowing going into this game that we got to get Jamar Jefferson 30 touches? He's got to be successful no matter what Oregon throws at us.
Yeah, it's honestly, Jamar has just been a stud, like you said. I mean, he had 196 yards against Cal, and this is a Cal team that actually already knew what Jamar could do and still couldn't stop him. But Oregon State needs to be more than one-dimensional. They can't rely on him for every play. And Tristan Jebbia has had spurts, but he is not a deep ball guy like, you know, the Beavs are used to with Jake Luton. So that has been probably my biggest disappointment in watching this Oregon State team is the lack of the offense aside from Jamar Jefferson to, sustain drives and pick up yards when needed. It's going to be a lot more dinking and dunking down the field. Just because, like I said, Jebbia does not have that arm strength, but we've seen flashes. It just hasn't all been put together in one package.
We saw Oregon fans, I should say, and Matt and I as well in person saw Tristan Jebbia's first start in last year's Civil War. How has he grown since then? And I guess you've just kind of outlined the fact that maybe the deep ball is not great, but like, what does the Oregon State fan base think of him right now? I mean, do they see the potential, or are they kind of going, maybe he's not going to be the guy long term because he is only a junior, and I guess in theory could have 3 years with the window being frozen this year.
No, you know, Tristan Jebbia, it was interesting because last year was his first start at that Oregon game, and he really didn't even look to one of his best targets that he had at the time in Isaiah Hodgins. So, I think we keep getting asked this question by the Oregon State fans is this an offensive line problem? Is this a Tristan Jebbia problem, or is it a wide receiver problem? And I would say it's actually kind of a combo of the three. This offensive line has three new starters filling in on the left side for two guys in Gus Lavaca and Blake Brandel, who started 4 years for the Beavers. So, you know, I think Blake had all 48 starts under his belt. So it's been a learning curve. They've picked up run blocking a lot quicker than pass pro. But, you know, Oregon State also wide receivers, they're faster than we've seen Oregon State receivers in the past several years, but there's no size. I mean, you're looking at guys all under 6 feet. So they're looking more to the tight end game and Luke Musgrave. But Tristan Jebbia, you know, fans are a fickle bunch, and the favorite guy on the team is always the backup quarterback when things aren't going super well. And I think fans are kind of in this undecided boat of, you know, this is kind of a throwaway year, if you will, a scrimmage year. So it would be nice to see maybe what some of these other quarterbacks have. We were told this week by Brian Lindgren, the offensive coordinator, that Chance Nolan, the junior college guy they brought in, is ready to go. And if they feel that the Beavers needed a spark on offense, that we might see some of him this week.
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting to look at this Oregon State offense. And do you think the offense would look different with a different quarterback? Like, I mean, do you think he handcuffs what Lindgren and company are trying to do?
Not necessarily. I mean, yeah, the deep ball's gone. I mean, Tristan just does not have that arm strength to bomb it down the field like a Jake Luton would. I haven't seen a ton of creativity, though. You know, one thing we've been talking about all week is seeing more fly sweep. I mean, that's something Oregon State has kind of built a reputation on, and especially with the smaller, faster wide receivers, at least having guys in motion, you know, almost every snap. And we haven't seen a lot of that. So I'm not sure if that is just a, you know, trying to keep things kind of vanilla and add things in as the season goes on, or, you know, if that's just something they haven't really come on to. But they're going to need something besides just Jamar, because you cannot be one dimensional against, you know, Oregon or Utah or some of these teams in the conference.
We've said so much about Oregon State's offense and how impressive they are with Jamar Jefferson. Mario Cristobal, Oregon's head coach, has raved about OSU's offensive line as well. Being very nimble, very, very strong, very athletic guys that can get downfield and move. I'm curious, though, how does Oregon State's front seven, you feel like, match up with Oregon's offensive line? Because the Ducks are also one of the better rushing teams in the conference. They've built an offensive line. They're huge compared to even the previous two seasons under Cristobal. Oregon struggled a little bit against UCLA and some things that they did with their stemming and their stunting. Does OSU's front seven match up well against Oregon's offensive line, you think?
Yeah, you know, that's such a good question because, you know, yeah, Oregon State's offensive line is small. I mean, they're one of the smallest O-lines in the conference. So that's who the defensive line is going against every single day in practice. They did okay against Washington, though, and Washington has a huge offensive line. Oregon State just has had so much kind of unfortunate situations with the D-line. You know, I mean, linebackers, you look at the linebackers, and I'd say it's the Oregon State linebacking crew is one of the top probably in the conference, just top to bottom with depth. But the defensive line is really, I don't want to say completely struggle, but they're missing Jordan Whitley, who was slated to be the nose tackle, and then this summer was diagnosed with a heart tumor, of all things. So I'd never even heard of a heart tumor, but he's out. Right. And, you know, he is the 350-pound double-teamed nose tackle that Oregon State is missing. So they've struggled some. Of course, I didn't like the scheme they went. They went with a two-man front against Washington State, and I think that was a mistake. But that's the biggest question, I think, heading into this game is how well Oregon State's defensive front seven can contain, you know, Oregon's quarterback. I think that's the key to the game right there. Is if they can keep him contained, I think they have a shot. But let him, if you lose containment on Tyler, it's going to go downhill quick. And we've seen Oregon State, I mean, last week against Cal, they gave up 317 yards in the first half. It was horrible. And then the second half, they only gave up 122. So they have shown the ability to make adjustments, but we haven't seen them play, you know, four full quarters of the best they can do.
Mario Cristobal made a lot, and I think Joe Moorhead as well, just about the linebacking core Oregon State has there at that next level. And you mentioned maybe the lack of size in the middle of that defensive line, but speak a little bit about some of those guys there. I know obviously most are familiar with Hamakhlar Rashid and what he did last year as one of the conference's most explosive pass rushers and just best linebackers, period. But sounds like that group as a whole has a lot of talent and could be a tough match for Oregon up front.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, it's been kind of a head scratcher because Hamilka has not had a huge year this year at all. You know, NFL scouts had come back and told him that they wanted to see him gain some strength and some speed. So that's what he's worked on, but he's not having that domination that he had a year ago. But the linebackers are really led in the middle from Omar Spates, who was a freshman All-American last season, and Avery Roberts, who transferred from Nebraska, who has really got his feet under him. Both those guys lead the team in tackles, just super solid. You know, Avery is that field general for the defense and is calling out plays and super solid there. And then, you know, you mentioned Hamilka, but then you also have a John McCartan, who had a big game. You have guys, basically the entire two deep, Kyrie Fisher, they've all started. So Oregon State has eight guys that have started at linebacker. So a lot of depth there, able to move guys in and out pretty quickly and pretty seamlessly.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's been the biggest revelation you feel like of this OSU team through three games? Like I look at their record and they were competitive against Washington State, but it feels like maybe they didn't play their best game. The next week against Washington, I feel like they got really screwed. They should have had that first down late in the fourth quarter. Inside what Washington's 10-yard line.
Yeah.
Oh, it was awful.
Probably would have
it was horrible.
Probably would have led to a touchdown. And who knows if Washington would have been able to, you know, march down the field and score a touchdown to win the game again. But you know, then against Cal, they dominated. Kind of a tale of every, you know, story you could say about this team in the first three games. But what's been the thing that stood out the most to you through three games for OSU?
It's really just the inconsistency. You know, we haven't, like I mentioned earlier, we haven't seen this team put together four quarters on all three sides of the ball. I mean, we've seen horrible special teams blunders in the first game. We've seen an offense that starts to click in certain areas and then a defense that fails them. So it's been really inconsistent. You know, it's just they can't sustain drives on offense, and then the defense will step up and kind of a bend don't break defense. Offense can score, but then the defense gives up points. It's just been kind of all over the board. I think we saw the best outing this past week against Cal, in that even special teams, you know, special teams was on fire. They blocked a punt late in the game that led to the go-ahead touchdown. And, you know, they seem to kind of come alive. But another interesting facet too is that first game against Washington State, it was interesting because coming into that game, I thought Oregon State would have an advantage in that they returned all 10 of their coaches. You know, this was not a new staff. This was all the guys knew the system, the scheme, and Washington State brought in an entirely new staff, new quarterback. And I thought Oregon State would have the advantage, but Washington State came in fired up and looked like the veteran team. Oregon State has kind of taken on the kind of the persona of their head coach and really the entire Oregon State coaching staff. And they're very even keel, very non-emotional. And that's kind of what we've seen from them, which I think was kind of shocking in the first couple games, but then we saw it pay off against Cal, where they were able to kind of stay the course and come back for that win.
Angie, Oregon's a two-score favorite here, and last year's game was extremely competitive. I know it ended up being a 14-point Oregon win, but really that's not even indicative of how close the game was. Seems like Oregon State and Oregon have been kind of uneven in their performances. I know Oregon's won three, Oregon State's only won one game, but like, is the sense that you've gotten both from like Oregon State players and coaches, but also from the fan base, that they expect this to be a lot more like what last year's game was in terms of the competitiveness of this game, or what's kind of the mindset or kind of sense you're getting entering Friday's game?
Yeah, I think, you know, the players and the coaches, they've been real quiet. You know, they obviously don't want any bulletin board material. It's business as usual, but they do have a quiet confidence. And I know before the season even started, they felt that there wasn't a team on the schedule that scared them, that they felt like they could compete. And that's, you know, year three now of Coach Smith, they're in that mode of competing, but they need to turn that corner and win some of those that they might typically lose. So the players and coaches, I would say, are confident about competing with the Ducks. I would say fans are probably less so, you know, just because you look on paper and Oregon has so much more talent, but sure. You know, it's interesting because, you know, Oregon State does now have a couple coaches. Coach Smith played in the Civil War, played in four. So did special teams coordinator Jake Kukas. They have Trent Bray has played in four Civil Wars. So there's some guys there that that on the coaching staff that know what Civil War is all about, or the Oregon game, the game formerly known as Civil War. See, I got stuck in it again. But, you know, that they know about it. And, you know, media has kind of tried to ask Coach Smith what his thoughts are, you know, how he, you know, if this is a bigger game. And he, of course, he's not saying, yes, it's a bigger game. But, you know, the kids from Oregon, Oregon State has a lot of guys from the state of Oregon. And this is a big game for them to go out and prove. I don't want to say prove their worth, but that, you know, I think there's a chip on the shoulder of Oregon didn't offer. So we need to show them that they missed out.
I've got an off the cuff question here. It's a year, weird year. Everyone's had a different off season than normal. Expectations, I think, can maybe be adjusted there a little bit. And I went into this year thinking Oregon State was potentially going to make a bowl game. And so if they have a losing record this year, I look at it as, hey, it's 2020, wash it away. But what's the trajectory feel like for Oregon State? Is this year, even if let's ignore the wins and losses column here for a second. Do you see this team, though, getting significantly better in year three of the Jonathan Smith era? Or have they plateaued it a little bit and they need to figure something out this offseason or the second half of this year? Or have they taken a step back? How do you just see the trajectory of this team, where they're going right now?
Yeah, you know, I was with you, Matt. I mean, I looked at the season before the start of the season, and I thought potentially bowl game for this team. I don't know if that's, you know, possibility now, but it's interesting. You know, there's two schools of thought on this season, and there, a lot of fans actually are kind of in that mindset of, let's let younger guys play. Let's give them their shot. This year doesn't count. Let the young guys play, get some live bullets, and help prepare them for next year. The coaching staff is still in that mode of, we're going to play, line up the, you know, the 11 best guys on both sides of the ball and go from there and see where our chips fall. So there's definitely not a give up there. I do think Oregon State needs to elevate recruiting in certain areas, especially on the defensive line. We're seeing, you know, just how tenuous that is, and you know, you lose one guy and it shouldn't be as thin as it is. So defensive line, I think, is a huge piece of importance. I would love to see the Beavers find another taller wide receiver, and I don't want to put a ton of stock in that guys have to be tall, but you know, we're seeing that guys are getting beat at the line. You know, they're getting jammed at the line and not being able to run their timing routes properly. So that's a, you know, a question. If they're, I mean, Champ Flemings, I love him. He's a tough kid. He's hardworking, but he's 5'5", 5'6", so 141 pounds. That's pretty easy to. He might be able to outrun you in the open field, but at the line of scrimmage, he's not going to win many battles. So yeah, I think they have a ways to go, but I think Coach Smith and his staff do have a kind of a plan in place. They have a vision for what they see. It's too bad that this whole pandemic and everything has caused kind of the havoc that it has, because, you know, it's, you know, they missed out on spring ball, which would have been hugely important, and the traditional fall camp and recruiting, you know, honestly, it's hard not to have guys coming up to Corvallis and checking out campus or being able to be on the road to, you know, talk to them and evaluate them. Oregon State isn't recruiting the 4- and 5-star kids, blue chips. So while I think at the beginning of this, it was okay because they had relationships with the guys, kind of their top targets already in place. Now they're missing out on seeing a lot of those, you know, the sophomores, juniors, the younger guys that they typically would be already evaluated and offered by now.
Okay. We'll get you out on this question here. How does Oregon State win this game? And I guess, how does Oregon win this game? What has to happen for both scenarios to play out?
For Oregon to win, I mean, I'll start with Oregon State. So if Oregon State wants to win, they need to contain Tyler, is it Shaw? Shaw? I don't want to mispronounce his name.
Shuck.
Tyler Shuck. With Duck.
Shuck with Duck. Okay. So yes, they have to contain him. And then defense or offensively, they need to sustain some drives and keep the defense off the field so much, and hopefully get something going besides just Jamar Jefferson. Cause I just don't think Jamar can carry the team the entire game in Civil War. You know, so it's kind of almost the opposite for Oregon. If Oregon wants to win, I think they need to stop Jamar. I mean, stop. A lot of teams have tried, and I mean, he has all three games over 100 yards, and against Cal it was 196. So he's obviously a special talent there. But Oregon needs to stop him and really stop Oregon State's tight ends. You know, Teagan Quatoriano and Luke Musgrave both are big targets for Tristan Jebbia. And then on defense, I mean, or on offense, like I said, if the quarterback can get loose, I worry about that.
She is Angie Machado. You can read her work on BeaverBlitz.com. It's part of the 24/7 Sports Network. You can go read her work pregame, postgame, in-game with your membership to DuckTerritory.com. Get the full story for both sides. Angie, really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you very much. And we will certainly see you in Corvallis.
See you guys this weekend.
Talk to you later, folks.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.